Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. And, man, I love talking about this guy. Don Rickles. I mean, everybody's got a story about Don Rickles, and there's a new book out now. Michael Starr is with us. He's a TV entertainment columnist for the New York Post. He's the author of 8 critically acclaimed biographies of William Shatner, Ringo Starr, Peter Sellers, Art Carney, Joey Bishop, Bobby Darin, Raymond Burr, and Red Fox. Man, what a lineup. Michael, how are you?
I'm great, Randy. Wow, you got all the books in there. Thank you.
I
got
to tell you what, man. And every one of those people that you profile, how did you select them? It's like my number one dream list of people.
I usually try to find people, first of all, that I'm a fan of, and I know that I can spend a couple of years with them, you know, in theory, you know, researching their lives and interviewing people about them and like them. And also try to find people who have not been written about yet in biography form, which I did with Don Rickles. I mean, you know, Don passed away only about 5.5 years.
Sure.
So this is the first biography of him, and I hope I did him justice. I mean, you mentioned in your intro, when we were talking how much you loved him, and I think that's sort of the message of the book. He was an almost universally beloved figure, you know, throughout his career, which was over 60 years. I mean, it was a remarkable career.
That was an incredible career. The new book, Don Rickles, The Merchant of Venom, is great. I got to see Don one time with our executive producer, Nate, just outside of Las Vegas about 3 years before he passed. And he was still, I mean, he was just killing it.
You know what it is to me, Randy? It's like, And I've said this to other people too, when they've told me their stories about seeing Don, it's almost like you, at any stage of his career, particularly that later stage of his career, it's like you flick a switch and he was just on. I mean, he would, no matter how he was feeling that night or later in his career, he had some health issues. But once he got on that stage, it was just like, you know, plugging him in. You know?
Yeah.
It's like he would come to life and he would do his act, and he hit all the notes, and you would never know, what was going on in off stage, because he was just so much a creature of live performing and putting it all out there on the stage and sort of tuning everything else out, because it was all about his performance that night. And he always made it special every night, which I think people appreciated and was part of his the magic of going to see Don Rickles live.
We're talking to Michael Starr, the TV entertainment columnist for the New York Post, and his new book, Don Rickles, The Merchant of Venom. Mr. Warmth, was there ever anybody any better on with Johnny Carson?
I don't think so. I mean, to me, the classic Carson shows are early to mid 70s with Don, either as an announced guest or he would often walk on unannounced.
Right. And right.
He just did, you know, and Bob Hope was another one they would just walk on. But Don had that, he was able to do that. And he was allowed to do that because he was so popular on the show. But one of the best of those Johnny Carson appearances is when he was on with his good friend Frank Sinatra. And, you know, Don just walked on, and Sinatra was talking about whatever. I think he had a TV movie out at the time. Don sits down. First of all, he kisses Sinatra, which
right,
nobody
right, did. I remember that, yeah.
And then he sort of leans over and he goes, "Yeah, Frank, I had a call from Jersey. Mongo Mangananzo started his car up this morning. Now he's all over the pavement, you know," and sort of, you know, making fun of Sinatra's alleged mob ties.
Right, right.
But Sinatra loved it. I mean, he laughed every time. And Don was the only one, I don't care what anybody else, he was the only comedian who could get away with that.
Oh, man, absolutely.
And their friendship went back to the late 50s. And Don was, when the Rat Pack was really big in Vegas in the 60s, Don was made an honorary member, and he even had his own, all the guys in the Rat Pack had like their bathrobes with their nicknames on it. And Don even, you know, so Sinatra had one made for Frank that said Bullethead. Bullethead. Even up until their dying days, he called them Bullethead.
Oh, my gosh. So yeah. When you were researching this book here, Michael, about Don Rickles, what was the most surprising thing that you found out? Because you were already a fan. What was the biggest thing that kind of stood out to you that you didn't know?
I think it had to be the fact that Don didn't start out to be, he had no aspirations to be a comedian ever. I mean,
really?
He grew up a fairly normal life in Jackson Heights in Queens here in New York City. He was in the Navy, spent 2 years in the Navy.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he was a seaman first class aboard the USS Cyrene. I hope I'm pronouncing it C-Y-R-E-N-E. It was mostly a supply boat, and he didn't see any direct action, but there were some bombs that went off near him in the South Pacific. He joked about this in his act a lot. But when he was discharged from the Navy, he went to acting school in New York. He wanted to be a dramatic actor, so he attended the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. A few of his classmates became very famous: Grace Kelly, Jason Robards Jr., Conrad Bain, who went on to a really big sitcom career, the Different Strokes and Maude, and there are others, Don Murray, who was an actor. But so he spent 2 years. It was a 2-year program. He graduated. He did fine, but he could not find work in New York City at that point. The TV business was in its infancy. So most people who wanted to be an actor, dramatic actor, they auditioned for Broadway shows, which Don did without any luck. And he sort of pivoted to doing he found work in small nightclubs doing mostly in celebrity impersonations, some, you know, song and dance stuff. But he also was doing this weird performance art where he had this act called The Man with the Glass Head. It's in the book. You have to read about it because it's really weird. And he would put a glass over a glass bowl over his head and act out the man's thoughts. You know, no wonder people weren't buying it. It was like, what the hell is this?
Right.
So he discovered he was working a strip joint down in Washington, D.C. in the early 50s. And he discovered he was being heckled badly for that act and for his impersonations. He discovered, and he fired back. He heckled back. And he discovered he had this affinity for off the cuff, just making fun of people. And even better, they liked it. I mean, not everybody liked it, but most people liked it. And
right.
And so he sort of shifted his nightclub back to insulting people in the crowd. Nobody was doing this at the time, especially in nightclubs. So he had sort of the field all to himself, and he started making a name for himself. And he hired a manager in Brooklyn named Joe Scandori, who owned a club called the Elegante, Club Elegante in Brooklyn. Joe was quote-unquote connected to, you know, people you don't like to get, you know, push around. That was always the there were people in the book who say he was. I don't know that for a fact.
Right.
Allegedly connected. But he was also a terrific manager for Don. They got along great, and Joe opened up a lot of doors for Don, and Don started performing in this club and getting noticed. And that led to nightclubs in Miami Beach, and then after that, where he met Frank Sinatra, a nightclub in Los Angeles called the Slate Brothers Club, where Don hit it really big. So the celebrities would line up around the block to come in and be insulted by this guy.
That's the other thing, Michael, that was fascinating to me. I mean, big time celebrities love this guy, and especially comedians. And, you know, the current slate of comedians, they all kind of point to him as the guy. And he had that unique ability, unlike an Andrew Dice Clay, okay? And I've seen Andrew Dice Clay perform and people walk out when they were insulted by him. But Don had that ability to insult you, and you laughed and loved it.
Right, because it was his style was more, it was like a broad insult, you know, and he never used profanity. He made fun of every ethnic group, never used ethnic slurs, but he would make fun of people playing off different stereotypes, and people, I think part of it was also people liked being part of his act. I mean, he would focus, especially in Las Vegas, when he would, the club managers, if he was playing at the Sahara, for instance, he played there for years. That's where he made his name in Las Vegas. The club managers would pick out people that they just knew Don was going to rip into, whether it was somebody who was overweight or somebody who wasn't good looking, you know, or
right.
Somebody who was wearing clothes that they knew Don, like, they would put them in the first or second row within Don's.
Oh, that's not even right. Fair. Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's,
within
that's
his eye line, you know, low-hanging fruit, right?
For right.
So he would rip into them, and I'd say for the most part, they loved it. You know, Don, they were part of this act of this very famous comedian. And the magic of Don was he would pick somebody out, let's say a guy in the audience named Steve or whatever, make fun of him, then go on to maybe 10 or 15 different people. And then a half hour later, he would come back to Steve
right,
and remember
right.
his name and say, Steve, you know, what is that? Is that your wife or a moose? You know, that kind of thing. And
right.
and it was just, yeah. And it was a time when people, if they were offended, they didn't show it, or they didn't go on social media to talk about it, or he quote unquote got away with it because it was done in a way that was, it's going to sound weird. It was sort of gentle. I can't even, it sounds
right.
weird for me to say that. But,
well, I
but
know.
It was his attitude, and people knew he was going to do this, and that's what he was famous for. So if you're going to come to a Don Rickles show and get insulted, you shouldn't have gone because
right.
you knew that
exactly.
was his style.
Oh, man.
You know? So,
I cannot wait to read this book. This sounds terrific. And of course, you know, I'm sure you talk about his resurgence, and he comes back, Toy Story and Casino. And he was a great actor. I mean, you know, I'm not phenomenal, but I thought, and that was the, I think that at the core of Don Rickles was that you knew his heart, right?
I think so. Yes. And he would always say at the end of his act, you know, everybody knows I love everybody. It's just, it's all an act. I just want to make people laugh and laugh at themselves. And I, for the most part, yes, I think most people were on board with that. You know, listen, not everybody's going to love your act for whatever reason. You can be an insult. You can be just a regular comic
sure.
who people don't think you're funny. But Don did not run across too much of that throughout his career. And, you know, he worked up until almost literally up until his dying day when he was 90. He was out there touring venues with Regis Philbin towards the end. Doing his act, going to the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival up in Montreal when he couldn't even walk. They had to sort of
right.
bring him on the stage with showgirls in front of him so people couldn't see. But once he was in his chair and once that light went on, it was Don Rickles. It just didn't matter.
Right.
So,
well,
yeah,
I'll tell
you, his magic.
What a great guy, and what a wonderful idea for a book. Don Rickles, The Merchant of Venom. Michael, thank you so much for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Randy. This was a lot of fun, and thank you so much for having me on.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.